You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by business and political expert Jay Amernick, political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, and me, journalist in all media Heather Vail, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern at politicalfixradio.com. And welcome to the show on this first segment of the new year. This is January the 7th, 2015. We have been doing this now getting close to a year. We're always having fun here on The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Jay is a strategic planner who helps his clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. And he's also the bridge in Nevada for Israeli companies who want to expand their business in the U.S. He has a development lab as well that creates smartphone apps and inventions. Rick Raddatz is a serial entrepreneur and an internet marketer with a degree in philosophy. His political development is called The Solution, which is to cap and prioritize government spending. I'm Heather Vail, also known as The Unwrapper, a freelance interviewer and journalist in all media. Welcome to the show, guys. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How's Jay doing?
I'm doing good.
Oh, you're there. All right.
Good. We hear Jay.
I think I was here.
I think the Hangout crashed, but, you know, we got the radio show.
Yeah,
so.
It did.
Okay.
Yeah. And like I was saying before, I've been at CES and literally everybody is saying to me that they're working on another platform because Google Hangouts is so unreliable for them.
Everybody's working on another platform.
Not everybody, but almost everybody I talk to who is in the sort of the software development realm.
Okay, well, so we're going to have millions of opportunities to try other things besides Hangouts. And in fact, I think Rick is working on something.
Mm-hmm.
Hangouts as well. So.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. And he had this snazzy new set going on.
Look at this set.
Yeah, we can't see it.
We can't look at the set because Google Hangouts crashed.
Well, you guys can't see the Hangouts at all? Because I'm looking great right now.
I'm sure you are, but we can't see it.
So. Oh, my goodness.
However, we did see it momentarily, and it does look great, I have to admit.
Okay.
So now the rest of us are going to have to do the same thing, so we actually look like a real show.
So I have professional lighting, a simple backdrop behind me lit up, so it's just white, and that's kind of a starter. I'm actually getting my new green screen in this week, and so next week on the show, I can look even more newscastery. Than today even.
Great, and hopefully next week Google Hangouts cooperates with us and we'll be able to actually see it.
But you haven't asked why I'm dressed in a suit. Me in a suit.
Because it goes with the news anchor look. Isn't that the only reason why?
Well, first of all, there's nothing behind me to suggest news anchor, so you must just be saying that I am very news anchory, which I take as a compliment.
Well, in your suit, you are very news anchory. Yes.
Okay. No, I'm wearing a suit because I am now officially a lobbyist.
Really?
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sure Jay has some commentary on that because he knows what works and doesn't work for lobbyists. Yeah, so is that the answer, Jay? Just put on a suit and all of a sudden you're a lobbyist?
Well, if he's actually a lobbyist, he will be registered and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I actually tried to register yesterday, but it was the day before the session began here in Colorado, and the people who were processing forms were saying, could you please come back tomorrow? Because they were just buried with pre-session paperwork. So actually later on today, I will be officially a lobbyist.
Okay. And so what's your platform? Cap and prioritize?
Well, in a way, indirectly. You see, I've actually partnered up with a different political movement, one that has more of an organization, but they're missing the idea. Okay, it's kind of funny. It's called the Convention of States, and the theory behind the Convention of States is that the federal government is out of control, and so we need to cap it. But, Econ 101 says that if you cap the supplier over here, you're just going to create more business for the other suppliers, in other words, the state government. So we're not talking about eliminating funding for the government. We're just talking about empowering the states. And so if you're on the political right, this movement is all about capping the federal government. Okay, that's step one in cap and prioritize. But if you're on the political left, this Convention of States movement is also about empowering the states, moving that money to the states so that the states can then have 50 different experiments for how best to help people. That's the prioritizing part. So this really is cap and prioritize, but it's already an existing movement. They have a great leadership team. They have organizations in 38 states, I believe. They have three states that have already passed this. It's called an application to call convention. So three states have already passed this, and we're expecting a lot more states this year, in part because of the success the Republicans have had in the at the state level, getting elected and having majorities. So so this has momentum, and it's consistent with cap and prioritize. And here's the cool part. There were two elements that founded this movement, conventionofstates.com, and one of them is in Colorado. So Colorado is kind of one of the two epicenters of this organization. And so I even get to meet on Monday. I'll be meeting with some of the leadership here at the highest levels. And so I get to influence their thinking over time in terms of how this not only – because right now it's kind of a political right movement, but they do address – the left needs a little bit, and I can help them with more language, more insights into how this truly does serve the left as well, just not in the way anyone expected.
Okay. So, Jay, what do you think about this new development?
I think it's great. It's a step in the right direction. I'd be interested to learn more about the Convention of States. I don't really know much or anything about them, but now Rick is wearing. I'm actually on the Hangout, Heather, so if you can ever, ever able to jump back on. I have a question. So Rick is wearing a tie. Does that mean that we're doing that? That's what we're all doing now.
Well, you always did do that.
No, I never wore a tie on the show.
Oh. Okay.
I wore a suit jacket and a shirt. Yeah.
But you see, Heather has the ability to see things that aren't there. Like, she sees me on a white screen and says, news anchor set. She sees Jay in a blazer, whatever you call it, just the suit coat, and she says, he's wearing a tie. So I think it's a woo-woo thing.
I see Jay all the time wearing a tie, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm just raising the bar for the show. If you guys want to continue slumming it in your, that's fine. That's fine.
Jay, is the Hangout live, or are you guys just sitting on a...
It says live.
It says live.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
It says live. All right.
I'll just use my little hand puppet here. Whenever Heather talks, I'll mouth the words in sign language. And so it'll be kind of like people will know that Heather's talking when there's silence on the Hangout.
Okay, great. So, guys, why don't we have Rick give us a little more details on what this cap and prioritize thing is?
Sorry, Rick's doing the puppet. For those of you who aren't on the Hangout... Oh, dear God. We're 5 days into the 7 days into the new year. We're come apart at the seams already.
But I'm looking good. So, okay, here's the quick summary Here's the quick summary of cap and prioritize. Okay, I kind of explained it there with the Convention of States analogy.
A little bit.
Or parallel effort. But real simply, it's all about capping the government so that we are sustainable at least. And, in fact, we can even do it in a way where the economy grows faster than the government, so the burden of government constantly goes down. The political right will love that. And then we can still maintain purchasing power. We can still help people as much as we're helping them right now in terms of real dollars. And if we take that money and we prioritize it, if we rank it from top to bottom, so the most important spending is on top, every year we'll find ways to improve spending because of the competition. And so over time, we'll find better and better ways to spend that money, and we will constantly improve social justice as the left defines it. So this truly is the union of right-leaning values and left-leaning values without either side having to compromise. And it's a little bit mind-blowing, but it's just something we have to talk about and think through until we understand it, because it's real. The math works.
Okay, cool. So what do you think? Top story before the break, or...
Yeah, let's introduce the top story, and then we'll
break, and then we'll talk about it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sounds good. All right. So this is the first top story of the new year out of Washington. President Barack Obama's approval rating is creeping upward. The economy's growing, and a flurry of aggressive executive actions on domestic and foreign policy have energized the West Wing. Obama's challenge now is to figure out how to keep the momentum going. To the White House, the immediate answer lies outside of Washington. Obama starts 3 days of travel today. He's heading to Michigan, Arizona, and Tennessee to preview manufacturing, housing, and education proposals that will be part of his January 20th State of the Union address. He's not scheduled a meeting this week with the leaders of the Republican-led Congress, which officially began yesterday, but he's planning to do that early next week instead. Obama says he's confident there will be areas of disagreement with the new GOP leadership, but he's hopeful for a productive 2015.
Ha!
Intentions for the first fight were set within hours of the new Congress being gaveled into session. Republicans moved forward with plans to advance legislation approving the Keystone XL oil pipeline, and the White House vowed to veto the measure. Senator Mitch McConnell, the Kentucky lawmaker who will now serve as Senate Majority Leader, suggested that the veto threat showed the president hadn't learned the lessons of Democrats drubbing in the midterm elections. Beyond Keystone, the Republican priority list for 2015 includes making changes to Obama's signature health care law, seeking to block his executive actions on immigration, and rolling back environmental regulations favored by the White House. Of course, the president's to-do list looks much different than that. During an event at a Ford assembly plant in Wayne, Michigan, Obama's expected to tout the resurgence of the American automobile industry that followed the government bailouts. He'll then travel to Phoenix to discuss proposals for making homeownership more affordable, and he will close his roadshow Friday in Tennessee, where he's expected to tout the state's new policy to pay for community college tuition. Officials said the president planned to make additional stops around the country next week in an effort to gain traction heading into the State of the Union. Now, escaping Washington has long been the Obama White House's go-to strategy for generating momentum during tough stretches of his presidency. White House aides say that one of the president's biggest frustrations last year was his inability to travel around the country in support of Democratic candidates, especially since his party was growing wary of his deepening unpopularity. But this time, the president's heading out on this week's fly-around with his approval rating showing some signs of strengthening. After dropping to 40% in the Gallup daily tracking poll around Election Day, the latest survey shows 46% of Americans approve of the president's job performance, and the percentage of people who disapprove of the president has also fallen below 50%. The slightly improving environment for the president comes amid a surge in economic growth that's been fueled by hiring gains, cheaper gas prices, and rising consumer confidence. The president's team also attributes some of the president's improved standing to his willingness to wield his executive powers in spite of Congress. He angered many Republicans by unveiling plans to allow more than 4 million people living in the U.S. illegally to stay in the country. Then he decided to normalize diplomatic relations with Cuba after a half-century freeze, which was another surprise. So there you have it. That's the top story for the new year.
All right.
That's a big one.
No, we're going to go to break first, right?
Going to break, and then we'll come back in a minute, and we'll talk.
All right, then.
Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, here with my co-hosts, Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. And before the break, we had the top story, which is about President Barack Obama taking a tour around the country amidst growing popularity and seeing if he can keep that momentum going in spite of the fact that Congress is completely against him for this year. So, commentary. Jay.
I'll say this so that you know the president's approval rating has gone up a little bit, and the thing about political currency is that it is fleeting, has a very very short shelf life, and should be spent quickly. So that being said, I think he also made the right move by not meeting with the opposition this week and letting it simmer a little bit and make it not seem like gloating. And doing it next week, a very clever move on his part. I want to take on three of the sort of issues. One is Keystone. That's a really tough one for the president because obviously the right wants more oil exploration and more oil coming in for, you know, through the pipeline. And then actually it has support on the left from the unions because it'll mean a lot of jobs. Or so they say. I have no idea. I haven't looked at those numbers. The second issue is gas prices falling. The president actually has little or nothing to do with gas prices rising or falling. There's very little. As a matter of fact, nothing short of an executive order, I'd imagine, that would either make some kind of price freeze, which would be crazy. I can't imagine a president doing that in modern times, an executive order that belays all taxes on gas, which is about, can be, depending on the state, can be about 25% of what you pay for a gallon of gas is tax. So he has little or nothing to do with that. Cuba, in my mind, I can't believe he's normalizing relations with them after they held an American captive for several years for doing nothing more than visiting the Jewish community there and teaching them how to download klezmer music from the internet. And he was silent that entire time. So that one I'm completely incensed about, that he's normalizing relations with Cuba.
A couple of things. First, his approval rating rise is probably exclusively on the left, maybe left-leaning independents, because nothing has changed that would make the political right say, okay, you know what, we'll give him a second chance.
He's our guy.
He's our guy. Okay, I didn't know it before, but yeah, you know what, I like Obama. No, so this bounce is a dead cat bounce. Maybe not dead cat, because what he's doing with the executive orders is very appealing to certain segments of the political left. And here's what's really interesting. You know, I think, especially with Obama mentioning that he's hinted that he's going to unveil a whole range of new executive orders at the State of the Union, I think what that means is that Obama's saying, wow, I like this executive order thing. It gets the political right in an uproar, and it's popular with my base, and we're getting things done. This could I could form my legacy on this. Okay, the problem with that is that's how dictatorships start. Yeah. Okay, that's how republics and democracies finally decline for good, is when too much power shifts to the executive, and it's too tempting and it's too popular. Putin in Russia has an 80% popularity rating. At least he did before the recent recession. So dictators who are pandering to the people can be very appealing, and I'm not saying Obama's a dictator, although an executive order is a dictate. Okay, he's borrowing that type of governance from the dictatorship to boost his ratings and kind of stick a finger in the eye of the Republicans. And what can the Republicans do? Because any response they do seems so passive aggressive. You're going to hold back the budget on this other thing. You know, it's hard to directly challenge the president doing that. And that's a shame, because this is an abuse of power. He should be consulting with Congress on normalizing relations. It shouldn't be a surprise. That kind of stuff really pisses me off.
Yeah, well, this is actually sort of a political game of tennis, you know, watching the ball go back and forth. Because when a Republican's in office and does things similar, all of a sudden the left is incensed and he's a dictator, and they are correct, but they're cool with it when it's their guy. Just like the Republicans are cool with it when it's their guy in office doing it.
Well,
all of a sudden it's okay.
I'd argue it's a little bit different. I think Obama here, not
no, 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 I no, I'm going to agree with you that this is and using it as a way to sort of not get his hands dirty is not appealing, and yes, is a dictate, as you suggest.
If the analogy is a tennis match, I think it's more like Obama is slamming balls at the Republicans in the groin area, and then the Republicans are taking their rackets and just hitting themselves in the head with it as hard as they can. I think that's what's happening here. And it's like every new executive order is another slam, you know, boom. Yes. And the Republicans don't know how to respond. What I think the Republicans need to do is have a positive agenda of their own and start passing bills that are popular, like the Keystone bill, and yes. start taking control of the discussion, the national discussion, and make Obama veto popular bills and show him for the goofy guy that he is.
Yeah, the Keystone one's an interesting one because the Republicans will find themselves with a very interesting ally, which is, like I said before, the unions, the AFL-CIO, and the Teamsters. That is that's an interesting thing, and they always say, you know, politics makes strange bedfellows, and this is certainly no exception to that.
Yeah, but just to make sure that this isn't too right-leaning of a discussion here,
right?
What the Republicans are missing is that you know the pursuit of social justice is popular and it will always exist. That element is there. People in the privacy of the voting booth will vote to have themselves be helped and to have the people they care about be helped and to help other factions they want help for whatever reasons. And so the government's going to be in this helping people business whether they like it or not. And their current strategy of fighting it and denying it, saying it shouldn't even exist, how's it working? For 80 years, even including Ronald Reagan, government spending and government debt has grown and grown and grown and grown. So this strategy on the part of conservatives, libertarians, it is not working. The answer, again, is cap and prioritize. And this is a Madisonian type of proposal here. Let's admit that voter ambition exists and it's dangerous and it's unavoidable. And let's also realize that we can harness it. We can make voter ambition counteract voter ambition. And the way we do that is cap and prioritize. We make all the different ideas for helping people compete against each other for a limited budget in a prioritized budget, and basically a priority marketplace. And in the competition of that marketplace, the best ideas will win, not perfectly, but over time, right. and we will be able to pursue social justice within libertarian limits. There you go.
Okay. That sounds good. Yeah, that was almost a rant. That was like, are we going to have two Rick's rants now every?
Well, it was rant-esque.
It was rant-esque.
It was rant-adjacent.
Well, maybe my philosophy needs a new name. Maybe it's like rantism.
No.
Because no one will get on board with that.
No, that's too. Yeah.
Rantology?
It's too radical.
Okay.
Rantology would be the method by which the philosophy
I got it. I got it.
What?
Rantonomics.
I actually like that one.
What cap and prioritize is a competition. It's a structured competition, but it's still a competition between ideas. And so it is about people passionate about their ideas, ranting. And so maybe cap and prioritize is rantonomics. I don't know. I'll have to think about that.
Okay. All right, let us know next week, or if you decide during the show today, let us know today.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. All right, let's take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll have Jay's inside perspective. So we'll be back right back with you in a few minutes on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. And before the break, we were discussing the top story, Obama's approval rating and his strategies for dealing with Congress this session. And of course, Rick took us on a rant, and we discussed possibly renaming the movement to Rantonomics.
No.
We'll find out later. You know, Rick likes to think on things, and he comes back with some surprising decisions sometimes. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
We'll see.
Okay.
Well, people say, hey, Rick, why don't you run for Congress? And I'm like, are you kidding? Because my whole approach to problems is to be creative. And when you're creative, you're wrong way more than you're right. Okay? I mean, so it's over time that creativity, meets with the real world, and then boom, you start to have breakthroughs and improvement and all this kind of stuff. So it's not about any one idea being correct. And if you're a politician, you got to be on your toes. You got to say the right thing pretty much all the time. And the right thing isn't always the truth. The right thing is the way to spin the truth so that you can't be caught in a lie, but you haven't offended the people who are in the room or the people who are going to be watching on YouTube in 5 years. So for me to be a politician, I would have to completely change the way I approach problems. And that's just not possible. So I'm going to be an activist and a radio show guy and just have fun with it.
Okay.
Yeah. So sometimes one can be more effective actually from the outside working with government than they can actually being in government.
Yeah.
There's sort of a famous story. Many members of Congress, when they first get elected, are the cockeyed optimists, and they get in there and they walk into their first day in session and they look around the room and they say, "My God, how did I get here?" And then, like three years later,
a Talking Heads song.
And then 3 years later, they'll literally go walk into that same room, look around, and go, "How did all these other people get here?" Because they realize it's like the cantina from Star Wars.
All right. So on that note, we're going to hear the inside perspective. Even though Jay just said sometimes you're more effective from the outside. Of course, Rick is our government outsider, political outsider. But
we need the apparatus of government to pass these laws.
That's true.
And we need someone to influence,
right?
Yes. So the inside and outside need to work together. That's the key.
Okay. So let's have the inside perspective for this week. Take it away, Jay.
Okay, so thank you very much. So when we last left you, wonderful people, we were talking about sort of what the legislation is going to look like. Is it going to be a constitutional amendment? Is it going to be a series of bills and resolutions? Or is it going to be one sort of omnibus thing? And I still haven't come up with an answer to that, because it's a very large question. But one of the things that struck me as I sat with my New Year's champagne listening to Guy Lombardo was that the one really appealing thing about CNP is literally it's the most responsible thing to do. There's just no two ways about it. Now the key is going to be getting that medicine down the throats of the people who are resistant to it. But that could become frustrating for us who are trying to administer the medicine. But it really is like a simple concept. What it reminds me of is actually the story of the Minotaur in the labyrinth and Theseus. You know, he comes up with a very simple solution to a very difficult problem, which is a string to get him out of the labyrinth. CNP in many ways is that. And it's a matter of sort of, yes, the details are going to be very complicated. There's no doubt about it. And if it is an omnibus bill, it's going to be, my guess would be probably several thousand pages long, just to make sure that everything is deliberate and every stipulation is covered to the extent that we know what they are at the time of the bill's writing. But simply put, it is the responsible thing to do. And that is my inside perspective.
I disagree.
You don't think it's a responsible thing to do?
No, Kevin Partridge is absolutely the most irresponsible thing possible. Are you kidding me?
Okay, all right.
I mean, what crazy person thought up with this idea?
Someone who's wrong more than he's right.
Yeah, you probably came up with Rantanomics too, my goodness.
Oh, for God's sakes. I try to start the New Year's off with a nice, warm, wonderful, optimistic outlook.
Look, during your rant, I was looking for a place to shout. I was looking for a place to shout, "I disagree," and I couldn't find one. I couldn't find one, so I agree fully with you. It is the responsible thing. The allusion to the Minotaur thing, Theseus or whatever, the string. Okay, that wouldn't be my analogy.
What analogy?
It doesn't work with the tennis court analogy. You can't put the two together.
You don't have to.
Yeah, I know. We're in a string. The net.
Labyrinth.
Yeah, it gets us out of the maze. Okay, I don't know. I'm just teasing Jay. You're absolutely right, Jay. That's a very good point, that cap and prioritize actually is the responsible thing to do. And the challenge, of course, is that government doesn't have a history of doing the responsible thing. And why is a very interesting question. The reason why, I believe, and this is even true in dictatorships, but you know, the government has to pander to the people, even in a dictatorship, really. Even a lot of dictatorships have a lot of overspending to kind of keep the people happy while they're still in control. Not all of them, but some of them. So this need to pander to the people is what is one of the forces, at least, that makes governments do too much spending in the name of good ideas. And so, but what do we do about it? Well, what does any adult do when he or she finally becomes mature? They start to set limits on themselves, and they prioritize within those limits, and then they go on with life. And that's maturity. So if you look at our country as a living being, which is an analogy that goes back to Aristotle and maybe even before, you know, we're kind of like a teenager, really. We have a lot of power, a lot of freedom, and we can do what we want. Mom can't tell us no. You know,
and we think we know everything.
And we think we know everything. In some ways, yeah, absolutely. And so in some ways, it's a very dangerous time. But it's also a transition to, once we skin our knees enough and we learn, oh, wait, this is how the real world works, then we can do the responsible thing. Now, unfortunately, we're a teenager with schizophrenia, because we have these voices in our heads. We have the left voice and the right voice, and they're telling us what to do, and they aren't agreeing. We can't combine them together. We can't synthesize this into one personality. We have split personality disorder, and so that's a little hard right now. But you know, with Cap and Prioritize, we can bring both of these voices together, and finally become a mature nation, a whole nation, a healthy nation.
All right. This is just sounding like a lot of propaganda today.
Well, no, it's
inspiring.
It is, yeah. And I'm going to add a small point, actually, because then once that maturity happens, the arguments and discussions in government between the two sides become more reasoned and mature, as opposed to a shouting match of insults and this person said this, and this soundbite did this, and then Jon Stewart's making fun of them both on The Daily Show and all that nonsense. So I've made this point before. You know, Cap and Prioritize makes us smarter.
But you know what, Jay? Before that era of harmony, before that era of harmony, I have to do a little mini rant on Heather, because she just said that my inspiring speech sounded like propaganda. And that deserves a rant. That deserves a rant, because propaganda, I don't know what the official definition is, but here's my definition. Propaganda is where you're using you know, the power of persuasion to persuade for the wrong thing. Okay.
Well, no, because both sides always have propaganda. They can't.
I know, and they're both wrong, aren't they? Okay.
Are they always both wrong?
Okay. Cap and Prioritize is truth. It is core philosophy. It is real. This is about inspiration, not propaganda.
Okay, if it's about inspiration and being responsible and all that stuff you guys were saying, then it certainly can't be rantonomics.
Yeah.
Like, you got to figure out, you're going to rant or you're going to be responsible. Which is it?
Response or rantonomics?
Responsonomics.
Responsibility. I don't know. Let's take a break.
Okay. And I'll give you the definition of.
No, it's not time for a break. I'm sorry. We can't take a break.
It's not time for a break.
Let me give you the definition of propaganda.
Okay.
It's official government communications to the public that are designed to influence opinion. Okay. Now, the information may be true or false, but it is always carefully selected for political effect. So
yes.
It has a negative connotation, but it actually, there used to be a government that used to have like a minister of propaganda, and it wasn't a bad thing. We call it strategic communications, right? But it's, in fact, it's propaganda. I'm trying to get my point across, but it's not. What Heather, the insult would be what they call like agitprop.
What?
You know?
Yeah, Jay. You're breaking up there.
Couldn't hear that little garbled bit at the end there.
But I agree with the with what Jay's saying. Jay's saying that the term officially in the dictionary is neutral. Well, yeah. Screw that. The way it's used today, it has lost that official, Webster 1784 definition. It has moved beyond that. Propaganda now is where people spin. Okay, it's about spinning. And my efforts, at least, and I think the efforts of this show, is about pursuing the truth. Yes. We may not always have the truth. We may be wrong a little bit or off center a little bit. That can happen. But just a random analogy here, Supreme Court has this concept called stare decisis. Okay, and what stare decisis means, it's some Latin phrase, What stare decisis means is that even though the past opinions are wrong, we're going to kind of give them a little extra weight and be consistent with them so people can at least predict how government will react to things. And that's kind of a bummer. I think that's the right approach for the lower courts, but I think the Supreme Court should go by litis houses. And now that's not real Latin, but someone can translate that to Latin for me. But litis houses is where you have this image of a lighthouse, a beacon, a star that points to true north. And even though you can never actually go true north, you're trying. And that's what we're aiming for here on the show and also in the philosophy, is that there's some deep, simple truths that guide how humans relate to each other. And that's what we're pursuing with Cap and Prioritize, because we can go on this on another show, but the structure of Cap and Prioritize, setting limits and letting competition happen within those limits, that's the same structure as capitalism. It's the same structure as democracy. It's the same structure as diplomacy. It's even the same structure as cap and trade. So no matter what type of conflict you're talking about at the government level, this idea of setting limits and using a transparent marketplace, that's the solution. Cap and Prioritize simply extends this to a new area, collective resources, and it makes us use them efficiently.
Okay.
All right.
What do you think about that, Jay?
It's interesting, the term collective resources, because again, here's where you're going to have just a little bit of trouble, or maybe a lot of trouble on the far left. As we've always said, the ideologues, there was always going to be a problem with, and I'll talk about the problem on the right in a second. But the left believes that the money, since the government makes it, is all ours, and these rich people have taken more than their share, so it's the government's job to get it back and redistribute it. They need to get out of that mindset, and then the right believes sort of the exact opposite, that. Nobody has the right to earn a living. You have to sort of fight for it or whatever they believe. I'm not sure, but they believe in no restrictions on that. But there have to be.
Doesn't. No, Cap and Prioritize allows us to achieve the ideal society by both ideologues' definitions, just not in the way they expect. Okay.
Well, that's going to be the challenge.
Yeah. But we can have a society where government makes no promises, none, no promises, and yet it still has money because we voluntarily decide to raise taxes as a 2/3 majority, perhaps. Okay, that's essentially voluntary. We can still have a society where there's money at the government to help people, but it's prioritized, and so by being prioritized, it's no longer a promise to the individual. You will get money when you retire. It's the collective making a promise to itself, saying, hey, everyone, we got money here to help people, but trust me, you don't want to be so bad off that you need this money. Okay, so try your best to do your best, and then if you do fall flat on your face, then we're here with a safety net. We're going to help you. So and really effectively too. We're going to give you the right education, the right clothing allowance, the right education, the right healthcare for a time, and because we want you to be motivated to get yourself back on your feet. So it has to truly be what Lyndon Johnson originally claimed Medicare, Medicaid would be, and that is a hand up, not a hand out.
Yeah. Well, I actually Medicaid, you know, since you bring it up, is already sort of that, because it's a real, I mean, you have to be in real bad shape to qualify yeah. for it. And you sort of don't want to be. And there's actually, unfortunately, now there's kind of an incentive, you know, for people who can't afford, for instance, like long-term care insurance, because it is very expensive, versus Medicaid. And there are people that fall in the middle that don't have enough for that and don't quite qualify for Medicaid. So it's almost like, well, geez, they should just spend down what they've got so they can qualify for Medicaid. I mean, it's a very – right, the way it's set up now is very detrimental and unsustainable as well.
Okay. Rick, do you agree with that?
I have to be honest. I got distracted by my email, and I wasn't listening.
Oh, great. For God's sakes.
All right. We're going to take the final break, and we'll be back in a couple minutes.
I'm going to rant against people checking email on the radio show.
We're going to have yet another rant when we return on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vale here with Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Before the break, Jay and Rick were agreeing on almost everything, which is a new development here on The Political Fix. It's something we have not experienced in the past.
It's a new year.
Yeah, so, and actually, I just realized that when I'm not on camera, it allows me to kind of like multitask, and that's where I fall into my ADHD the habit there of not listening to people. So,
okay.
My yeah. bad. Okay. okay, so let's hope none of our listeners have ADHD. Anyway, is it time for Rick's rant?
Yeah, I'd say so. So we already had inside perspective with Jay Amernick. Now we're going to have outside perspective, which we like to call Rick's rant, even though, you know, we have had quite a few rants from Rick already on this show. But here's the official one. This is the one that we're actually going to say. Go for it.
You know, we need a little like music intro for Rick's rant. Like, Rick's rant, Rick's rant. You know, we need some kind of like, you know, emotional.
Yeah, that's what we need.
I think we need that.
Yeah.
So, see, what should I rant about today? I think what I want to rant about today is the political left. Okay, I'm just going to pile on them right now, and I'll tackle the political right next week. But the political left, because I've been in some discussions recently on Facebook, and this was in a Facebook group that supposedly is trying to bridge the divide. And it's populated by mainly left-leaning people, to their credit, and then a few like libertarians and strong conservatives on the right. And there's not a whole lot of moderates that I can tell. At least if they're there, they're just lurking. And so my issue with the political left I want to rant about here is where these things that are just like clearly not true, okay, get echo chambered around, and boy, are they hard to fight against. And I'll just pick one example. And the example is how, you know, the economy did great in the 1950s with 90% tax rates, and so more taxes would not harm the economy, and we should do it, and we should achieve social justice. But wait a minute. Okay, let's pretend that raising the tax rate to 90% won't kill the economy. Okay, the reason it didn't back then is because there were different kinds of tax breaks, first of all, so no one really paid that amount. Second of all, it did hurt our economy, but at the time, Europe was destroyed thanks to World War II. We were the only modern manufacturing zone of any size left, and so we really benefited. So it was a different time. But the bottom line is, even with those tax rates, was social justice achieved? No. Okay. And even if we did those tax rates today, would we have enough to even cover our annual deficit? No. Okay. So it's like, even if the left got everything they wanted in terms of taxing the rich, it still wouldn't solve their own problem. Okay. And it would absolutely create new economic problems. Because now, in today's world, we can invest anywhere in the world. And there's lots of places that are actually more economically free than the U.S. is. So if I'm an investor, if I'm going to build a big factory or whatever, I'm not going to build it here where the governing is questionable, okay? And the tax rates are high, et cetera, are punishing. So So, hey, you in the political left, you got to wake up and realize that a lot of the things you hold, you cling to, are just wrong. And that's not to say the political right is all right, because I'm gonna rant on them next week. But if you're on the political left, take a good look at what you're proposing and ask yourself, would it actually achieve what you want? My bet is that if you look at it critically, you'll admit at least this. Your ideas on the left will not achieve what you want. You're missing something, and I believe that what that is cap and prioritize.
You're just making a blanket statement that regardless of what their idea is, cap and prioritize is what's missing?
Yes. And here's my argument. Cap and prioritize is the solution to the root problem, to humanity's root problem. And actually, that's on my TED Talk on our website there, politicalfixradio.com. So real quickly, the reason cap and prioritize addresses the root problem is that we have this issue with private action. We have this issue with collective action, with political action, with foreign action, and also with our action relative to the future. And our founding fathers in modern society, we've solved three of the five incentive problems here. We know how to encourage the right private action. That's capitalism. We know how to incentivize the right political action, at least in terms of who's elected. That's democracy. We know how to solve or properly incentivize foreign action. That's diplomacy. We don't know how to properly incentivize collective action. And we know how to incentivize our action relative to the future. That's cap and trade. But there's disagreements about when to apply it. That's okay. But the right liked it for acid rain back in the 80s. The left likes it for carbon production. We know the model works. It's just a question of how to apply it. So, I don't know. Whatever. Okay, I ranted enough. It's time for...
Jay, what do you think?
I don't know. I was checking, playing Candy. No, I'm kidding. Rick's exactly right. I mean, obviously, comparing the economy of the 1950s to the economy of today it's completely different. The world has changed. Not only the chessboard has changed, the pieces on the chessboard have changed and how they can move. So it's like I said, it's a completely different game. And again, it goes back to what I was saying before, that there is this belief on the left that I've quoted, the Williams Jennings Bryant before, he said no one ever made $1 million honestly. Well, that's completely false. That's ridiculous. But it was a way of energizing the downtrodden, the left, and saying you're not whole because of what this person has done to you, which is a classic way of garnering hate. That's how any sort of dictatorial power comes into being is by going to the downtrodden and saying it's not your fault, you're a victim of the system. That's not you're not in control of your own actions. No matter what you do, the game is rigged against you for whatever reason, because of your economic status, the your religion, the color of your skin, whatever. And it's in a country like this, it's complete nonsense. But it's how unfortunately the far left has gained traction and power. The right does it too, and we'll get to that next week. But we're talking about the left this week, so. So yes, it's another agreement.
All right.
Well, all right. This is no good.
Yes, it is.
How are we supposed to have conflict in our radio show?
How are we supposed to have a show that people will listen to if it's like all just in agreement?
Because it doesn't have to be. Because it doesn't have to be a shout. Oh, yeah. It's a different type of show. It doesn't have to be a shouting match.
Well, then I can't rant. No, what we need to have is
guests that you can rant at.
We need a show called Insult the Guest.
Okay, just one second.
Pile on the guest.
Yeah. Well, no, I think we should have guests that you can tactfully persuade.
No. Pile on the guest. Smush the guest. There's a game that boys play called Smush the Guy with the Ball. Okay, there's other words besides smush that you.
Yes, that's actually not what it's called, but
I was saying that there's other words that people use besides smush, but basically is that whoever's got the ball, you jump on them, okay, and then someone from the bottom of the pile grabs the ball and runs away, and then just smush the guy with the ball again. So we need a guy with a ball that we can smush.
Okay, well, Jay's good at being that guy with the ball. He's used to that.
So I should be more aggressive towards Jay?
Well, yeah.
It's only 99.99% right, and that 0.001%, oh my God, I can't believe you said that.
Yeah, Minotaur, what were you thinking?
What kind of analogy is a Minotaur string analogy?
A simple solution to a very complex and daunting and deadly problem.
It actually is a good metaphor.
That's
why we still read Greek mythology.
I kind of like it, except that the average listener doesn't know about the string. Maybe they heard the word Minotaur before. You didn't know Theseus or whatever the guy's name is. I don't. And whatever. And do they know about the string? I don't know.
That's how he gets out of the labyrinth.
Okay, explain the string, Jay.
Okay. So Theseus goes over to Crete to rescue the people who have been captured and enslaved by the Cretans inside the labyrinth. In the center of the labyrinth lurks the Minotaur, which is a half-man, half-bull monster. And the way Theseus can get in and out is that he is given what is actually called, a word we use today, he's given a clue. The ancient Greek word for clue, and what it actually means is a ball of twine. So the word clue comes from that. Anyway.
That's interesting.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Yeah. That's why we still read Greek mythology thousands and thousands of years later, because it talks to our human condition and the psyche. Anyway,
but he does.
Okay, he ties one end of the twine to the entrance of the labyrinth, right, and then unwinds it as he goes through, so he'll be able to follow it out of the labyrinth to rescue the people.
But that's classic. I mean, we've seen it with crumbs. We've seen it with
No. The first time it was ever used and ever recorded was in that myth.
Okay. And it's a myth, therefore it happened. Right. Okay.
Well, no, but it's a story.
Okay. So it's the first time they used that plot point.
Yes.
That we have seen repeatedly again and again and again as crumbs and stones and everything else that we've seen. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Go to the source. I like it.
That is the source.
That's what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Oops. I wasn't paying attention to Doug. Apparently, we had 60 seconds. And how long ago was that? I think. Oh, 30 now. All right.
30 seconds ago, apparently.
It's 30 seconds now. All right.
All right.
So, guys, this has been a good show for the first of the year. You know, even though it was a little too kumbaya, you know. You were taking pot shots at the left. However, the whole vibe of it was very peaceful and, you know, responsible and all of that. So
pot shots? I destroyed them.
I think next week you
pot
should.
Pot shot, it was a direct hit.
I think next week you should concentrate on more rants.
Yeah.
You each get 5 rants next week.
Rantathon.
Rantathon. Yes, next week is Rantathon. All right, so check us out at politicalfixradio.com. Look at Rick's...
Don't let me interrupt you. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, well, Rick's always interrupting. And on behalf of... Rick the Interrupter, Jay the... Rick the Interrupter, Jay the...
Go for it.
...pathologist, and me, Heather Vale. We'll be back with you next week on The Political Fix. Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Vale Goss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The 5 economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.